Today on the Inland Journal podcast, my colleague Steve Jackson has the third in a series of interviews with Spokane mayoral candidates. On Wednesday's podcast, he talked with Jonathan Bingle. On Thursday, he interviewed Kelly Cruz. Today, he'll talk with City Council President Ben Stuckert.
What do you think is the very most important issue that you and the council or the city government is facing right now?
Yeah, I think our most important pressing issue, because it touches so many areas, is housing. And we have a housing crisis right now in Spokane. If you look at affordable housing, we have 800 people in the city that have housing vouchers, which is just as good as cash. And in 2018, 800 of them couldn't find housing, affordable housing. So we're not building enough affordable housing. We need more subsidy in affordable housing. But on the other hand, we have a shortage of market rate housing. And we have a 1 month supply of houses available for sale, and we have a 1.2% vacancy rate in apartments in our city. There isn't enough variety for people. And if we think back to, you know, the last 20 years, the state of Washington agreed to the Growth Management Act and said, we're not going to sprawl outward. And so we've been limited where we can build. And so the agreement was that urban areas would build density and housing variety. So that can mean big apartment buildings, but it can also mean duplexes and fourplexes and alternative dwelling units in people's yards. And housing affects everything. And the reason I say that is really if we look at Monroe right north of here, where we just spent $7 million on a streetscape, we've seen a dozen new businesses open. If we don't have housing variety around Monroe, right now we have single family homes. And we should be really surrounding our small business, our neighborhood retail centers, our centers and corridors is what our comprehensive plan calls them, with housing variety. And if people don't have choices, they have nowhere to move. So say you're somebody that's retired, you're 65, you may want to downsize from that home that you've lived in your entire life. But if there's no apartment, then there's nobody that can move into their home. And so we've seen a stagnation in the market where there's not enough supply. And then what happens when there's not enough supply is rents rise. And we've seen numerous apartment complexes in Spokane where rents have gone up over 50% in the last year. And that puts people out on our streets. And so we need to be building more affordable housing, but we also need to be increasing the supply of housing at all levels in order to affect. And if you think about Perry Street is a great example in our community of a thriving business district that 20 years ago wasn't. And it was because they spent money smartly on infrastructure on Perry Street, created a more walkable environment. People started opening businesses there. But we've seen that stall out in the last 2 years. We have an empty building on 9th and Perry, and we also have the old Highs Market on Perry Street that's been empty for over 2 years. And the reason is because 3/4 of Perry Street district is surrounded by single-family homes. We need to create density around our business corridors and centers in order to be compliant with the comprehensive plan. So it affects businesses when you don't have the density around those business districts. It affects rising rents. It puts people on the streets. If we don't have affordable housing, they can't get off of the streets. It affects public safety because we know that walkable neighborhoods are safer neighborhoods. We've seen that in the Sprague area where we did a targeted investment program, and we've actually seen crime decrease in the areas where we improved the street environment and created the density. There's some new housing projects down there, and we've actually seen crime decrease by 30% in that area while property rates are rising and values are rising, creating wealth in the private sector.
Okay.
And that affects really the city's ability to pay services. The way we're going to move forward and pay for all those services like public safety that the citizens deserve and provide homes for people that are homeless on our street is by creating a denser environment around our business districts. I think that's the most pressing, and it's urbanism at its core, right? How do we grow as a city? And I think that's the crux of this conversation. And I know we talk about other candidates would like to just talk about homelessness, but I'd like to talk about these larger issues that we have that are the cause of homelessness. Homelessness is necessarily being without a home.
Do we need to change some zoning things in the city to get that density that you were talking about? Is that why we're not at that level?
Yeah, we need to immediately start by looking at upzoning the areas on Monroe, upzoning the areas on Perry, move over if you look at Division Street. And the conflicts you hear between neighbors and businesses are because you have a single family home, somebody parks in front of their driveway, and I'd reasonably be angry if they parked in front of my driveway too. And the way to do that is create these transitions to the single family zones. And so we can solve this, and we need to act fast.
Now, this goes hand in hand with our next question, which is about the homeless situation. And so the specifics, talk a little bit about the city's response and what policies you'd advocate for. And maybe that is your main thrust, is to get more available housing anyway, but other issues related to homelessness?
Yeah, so homelessness is really, you should look at it as, what are the immediate responses that we need, and then what are the long-term solutions? And we need to keep talking about that, so we're not just being reactive all the time. But in the short term, we have shelters. We don't have a day shelter. We need an immediate day shelter that's 24/7. We're in the process of buying a new building that's not in the city core. We need to make sure our shelters are spread out geographically so that you're not concentrating everybody in one area. We've seen the problems that that causes. But immediately, all of our shelters should have, we can call it caseworkers, we can call it housing assistants, we can call it, somebody needs to be connecting every person that's in a shelter, because every person has a unique problem, whether that's substance abuse addiction, whether that's mental health problems, or whether that's not being able to find housing for themselves. And you have to have somebody there. New York had a great policy when they tried to clean up Times Square, and they put social workers in Times Square every day, and it took 2 years, but they connected these people to services, and you need to be where the people are. So not only do we need the homeless outreach that go to the camps that we currently fund, and we've doubled funding for that, and they're having great success. Our programs have taken 3,000 people off the streets, but there's more people going on the streets than are coming off the streets, and that creates some challenges. And we need to immediately have people being connected to services in those shelters. We need to reimagine. We can't just think of a shelter as a place where somebody sleeps. It needs to be somewhere where they can sleep, but also get the tools necessary in order to get off the streets permanently. So we need to start with that. We also need to implement the public safety levy that I was the sponsor of, because we've targeted 5 of those police officers to downtown to create a safer environment. We also need to expand the program called Blue Bloods in the police department, where we're partnering social workers with our police department. And those have seen an 80% diversion rate, because we know that if you take somebody off the streets, and maybe they're illegally camping or illegally sitting and lying, and just throw them in jail, that does no good. Community court works. Community court work needs to expand and become permanent. And we need to expand the Blue Blood program, where we're partnering the social workers. Then in the long run, we need to look at the two-pronged approach of housing. How do we have more subsidy towards housing? I know I'm working really hard to get about $10 million more into affordable housing by the end of this year. But we see a subsidy problem where the federal government and the state government have cut back on their subsidy for affordable housing. And then we need to talk about our economy. How do you strengthen our small business centers and open more small businesses? We've seen more small businesses open in an area like Sprague and on Monroe, where we've invested in the infrastructure. Those are equaling more small businesses. That's good. That's economic opportunity. And then we need to focus on places like the West Plains, where we're seeing large companies like Amazon come in, and we've also just signed a real estate deal with Mullen Technologies. We've got the tools in place, but we need to work harder at it.
Maybe a response to one of the other mayoral candidates' claims that when we're providing more and more services for the homeless, that we become sort of a destination for homeless folks from outside our region. Do you have any response to that one?
Crem 2 did a really good story in late May on this and disproved that fact. They couldn't find any other cities, and they went and discussed this with, I think, 7 or 8 different cities. And then in the I think it's the May 30th or June 1st Inlander that just came out. There's an article by Daniel Walters that disproves it. We need to be working on facts. One of my mayoral candidate opponents thinks that moving the police precinct downtown from one physical location to another is going to magically solve our problems, in addition to the fact that maybe, I guess, they're both opponents are saying that we just shouldn't provide services. I find that reprehensible on 2 levels. One, we're not basing it on facts, because if you actually look at a heat map of crime in downtown, it actually takes place over by the current location of our downtown precinct. And then the second thing is when somebody's drowning, you pull them out of the water. We don't ask them where they're from. We don't ask them what zip code they were born in. We don't ask them to pee in a cup. We pull them out of the water. If you're in a boat and somebody's drowning, you pull them out of the water. And that's the moral and right thing to do. And to suggest that we shouldn't be providing services as a city is not what a leader does. A leader inspires people to be their better selves. The leader doesn't lead by fear.
Okay, excellent. Let's talk about the current. This is kind of our general series of questions to evaluate the current elected leadership of the city, which obviously is going to change with this election. But maybe just a read from you. How's it going well, and where are changes most needed?
Well, yeah, and I think that's when we are talking about some issues, and people in election season tend to think things are going awful. And I've been hearing for 7 years that the city's on the best track it's ever been in, and the data points that out. And I'd just point out that we've paved more streets every year for the last 3 years running, and we've got a great arterial street plan in place. We've doubled the money we're spending on residential streets since I've been in office. I ensured that we went from $2.5 million on residential to $5 million a year. We have more police officers and coverage on the streets than ever before in the history of Spokane. And we also, I led the public safety levy to pass that despite opposition from the Spokesman Review and from the mayor. And it passed by over 60% and is going to put another 20 police officers on the streets and 5 more downtown. We've invested more in our river than we've invested $300 million cleaning up our river, the centerpiece of our city. We've seen great revitalizations, including Sprague, which I led the effort on. We've seen a revitalized Monroe Street, which has seen over a dozen new businesses open. Record private investment. If you look at the North Bank, right north of where Riverfront Park is, not only are we investing $65 million in the centerpiece of our park, but there's massive private investment by Larry Stone, by the Mounsey brothers at the Wonder Bread building, and now we're going to have a new sportsplex. There's all sorts of great things going on, and the city's in the best financial position that it's ever been in. We balance the budget every year. The last 4 years running, we've seen record sales tax growth, and so we've been putting that in reserve, so now we have reserves ready so that if there's a recession, we're not going to have to lay people off. Things are going great in our city. Yes, we have challenges like the homeless issue that's growing downtown, but we can address that and we can solve that together. That doesn't mean that we haven't been successful for the last 7.5 years. I just see all the great things. I remember when I left Spokane after I graduated from Gonzaga University in May of 1995, and I took off for a few years, and it was because downtown was dead. Downtown is more vibrant today than it ever has been. It has more arts. It has more culture. I've led the tripling of arts and culture funding in our city, and I'm proud of that. And I think it pays off when you invest in the arts and culture.
You're listening to an interview between my colleague Steve Jackson and Ben Stuckert, one of 5 candidates for Spokane mayor.
This is a question I'm directing to you because of your experience. About your own experience, you've been in the city government for quite a number of years. Maybe just your own background and how it will translate if you were elected in your ability to deal with city government and or city employees. I mean, you have a lot of expertise in that.
Well, so I started off working 12 years in the business world, running a 3-state region for Tickets West. I doubled income revenue there from $13 million to $26 million. I supervised and managed 50 people while I was there. And then I ran a nonprofit and started that from the ground up and had 10 employees 4 years later when I left. So I have success leading organizations. And then at the city, I've led the city council. And I've really been spending the last 7.5 years researching, understanding what best practices are. But any large organization, and the city has $800 million budget and has 2,000 employees, and any large organization is a very large bureaucracy. And it takes you in a new job in a large bureaucracy at least a year in order to figure out and ground yourself. And I'm the only candidate running that can start on day one, put my best foot forward, know exactly what we're going to accomplish, how we're going to solve problems. And I have relationships that I've built throughout the state, but not only in the state, in the municipalities surrounding Spokane. I know all the employees at City Hall and out in the water department and out in the sewer department. I know what projects are going on. I'm the only candidate that's going to be able to hit the ground running on day one.
Let's talk a bit about these proposals for a new county jail and also the reforms that are taking place right now to reduce population at the current jail. What's your own opinion about? Do we need a new jail? Or?
Well, so here's the city is in charge of paying for misdemeanor holds, misdemeanors that spend their time in jail, and we pay the county for those. We also have our own probation department, our prosecutor's department, our public defender's department, and we have the municipal court system with the judges and the courtrooms. Those are all in different locations, and we're paying the county for jail beds. What I'm working on right now with the administration is to create a misdemeanor system that would pull our whole municipal system out of the county system. And that means that all the money we're paying on rent and leases and the buildings we own that house separate can all be put in one building. We spend about $5 million a year, whether that's on the jail beds or leases or the prosecutor's office and the staff and the public defenders and the probation department. If we put those all in one building, we can build a new building, gain efficiencies in the system, and also house our own misdemeanors. And so we're not paying the county anything. And they can go, but that'll decrease their system. We've already had conversations with other municipalities in Spokane County, and they'll use our misdemeanor system. So we can take misdemeanors, because somebody that's being charged with a misdemeanor doesn't need to be in the county jail. They could be in a bed, and maybe there'll be a couple secure little cells inside this municipal court system, the municipal system, but it doesn't necessarily, not all misdemeanors, they can be in a bed in a pretty insecure, in a secure location, but don't have to be in their individual cells. We can do this for the exact same amount of money, gain efficiencies in the system, and pull ourselves out of that, and decrease the load on the Spokane County Jail by pulling all the misdemeanors out of their system. So I know that jail, the county jail, is old. I've been on tours of it many times, spent hours and hours there, and it's old and it's not up for how many people that we have in it now, but that's really a county decision. But what we can do is pull all the misdemeanors out of the county system and actually get real places for our judges to have offices, real courtrooms, and we can do it all without spending an extra dime of the citizens' money.
So we know this big Amazon plant's going in on the West Plains, and now they're doing that expand or the infrastructure work out there. They had that big announcement this week. So that growth, I mean, it's got to affect the city. And I off the top of my head, I know one thing was probably just we're sending water out there. But I'm asking you kind of generally, how should the city of Spokane approach the problems that may come with all this growth on the West Plains?
Well, so I was one of the founders of the West Plains Public Development Authority. I was in the very first meeting, and I was in the very last meeting, and I met for 2 years trying to convince everybody this is a great idea. And this is a really unique partnership between the county, the Spokane Airports, and the city of Spokane. And we're revenue sharing for the first time, and it's true collaboration with the county. And we were actually able, on the last week before Amazon closed the deal, they came to the Public Development Authority board, which I'm on, and we needed to make sure that that profit sharing went partially into this road project out on Geiger Boulevard and the interchanges. And one of the things that our Public Development Authority is really looking at is stormwater out on the West Plains, because as we grow out there, not only are we going to have the housing pressures, which I talked about, and we need to aggressively address housing, because as more jobs come, which jobs are opportunity, and the better our economy is, the less problems we're going to have with poverty in our community. One of our largest problems is a low median household income, which means somebody's, when you don't have the jobs and people have a low median household income, they're much more likely, if their rents rise or they lose their job, for even a couple weeks to become homeless. And so we need to be focused on this economic development. But part of our Public Development Authority is we're spending significant dollars looking at stormwater out on that West Plains, because it's all rocky out there. And then there's a couple paleo channels that can collect that stormwater. And we're really looking for, as development happens out there, how do you route that stormwater into those paleo channels so that you're collecting it and it's not running over? Because as you see with big rains on the South Hill of Spokane, why we spent $300 million on combined sewer overflow tanks was because in big rains, when you're in rocky areas, it'll overflow and overflow into our river. And so we need to make sure that doesn't happen. But the two biggest pressures are going to be really the stormwater and that environmental system. And we need to be as environmentally friendly, especially with all that's going on and that we're not doing as a nation. And then we also have to address the housing crunch. And that's going to require us to rezone some areas inside the city so people have choices about where to live.
Are we sending, and here's, I want to focus you on this just for a sec too. We are sending some of our aquifer water out that way, right? Because their water table has declined dramatically.
Yeah.
So what's the long-term implications for that? Are we worried that we may have to send even more water out that way?
Well, most of these manufacturing, like Amazon, the use of water at that facility is minimal. It's just bathrooms and sinks and doesn't require a huge amount. Like if you had a 250 homes out there, would use a heck of a lot more than those 1,500 employees.
But we're going to get more homes out there if there's more development.
We are, if there's more development. And Airway Heights is running out of space to build homes as well, and they are. And their aquifer that they were running off is different than ours, was the groundwater that was poisoned by Fairchild.
Mm-hmm.
And so we've signed an agreement. But really, our aquifer is very healthy right now and has been recharging really well. And we, the council, made sure when we signed the agreement with Airway Heights and when we sign any of these agreements to extend water, we make sure that if our river flow goes down to a certain point, then it goes into emergency situation. And so right now we're doing really good. Our river and our aquifer are probably our two biggest assets that we have that other communities don't have.
But you meant if it goes into an emergency situation, you said, does that mean we tell them, hey, we can't provide this much water?
There's certain situations where Airway Heights, if the river goes down too low or the aquifer got too low, they would have to ration their water out there.
Okay.
We wanted to make sure there's protections for our environment when we do agree to sell water.
Okay.
But water is life, and you couldn't tell Airway Heights, we know your groundwater is poisoned, but we're not going to give you any water. That's not a good neighbor.
Talk a bit about how you would prioritize spending.
Well, so I've led the budget negotiations with the administration for the last 7 budget cycles, and I'm leading it here in my 8th and final cycle right now. We made sure over a 5-year period to prioritize public safety and put 10 new officers in every budget for 5 years in a row. This year, it's going to be different than prioritizing new things. From the numbers I've seen so far this year and late last year, the economy is slowing down a bit, and which is why we built up the reserve so that if we actually do dip below that 20-year growth rate, then we have reserves in order to make that up so that you're not laying off employees. But I firmly believe that we're going to open a second shelter, and that one needs to be 24 hours, and it's not going to be in the city core. But that shelter is going to need operational dollars. In this year's budget, we put about 6 months' worth in, but it's going to need 12 months of operational dollars next year, and it needs to be open 24/7. So we need to prioritize that because that'll take the pressure off of what we're hearing about in downtown Spokane. So that's one priority. And then the second priority is that, and council's really firm on this, is that we pass this public safety levy that's going to keep 30 of our firefighters employed, but also hire 20 new police officers. And that's a priority to make sure that nobody's trying to abscond with that money, spend it for other things that departments might have pet projects in. So to me, that's going to be really important as we go into 2020, is to be ensuring that the public safety levy is spent correctly, ensuring that we're still spending record amounts on our streets, and making sure that the second shelter that's not in the downtown core is fully funded operationally.
And this is actually the final one, Ben, but I'll ask you if you want to address anything else we haven't talked about. So how well do you feel that you've prepared for elected office, and what are the characteristics you possess that would make you an effective representative?
I think I've been preparing for this office my entire life. I've worked in the business world and then switched to the nonprofit world and then switched to working in government. So I've seen all aspects of it. I've seen large organizations. I've run small organizations. I've managed people. I've managed budgets. I understand what the city is. I grew up here, went to Lewis and Clark High School, went to Gonzaga, and I love Spokane, and I think we're really moving in the right direction, and I want to continue moving us in the right direction. I'm the only candidate that has the leadership experience, the management experience. I built the relationships necessary for this job, and right now, as far as I can tell, everybody just wants to talk about the one issue, and we're a lot more than that. We're about delivering city services, and I'm the only candidate that can step in on day one and make sure your garbage is delivered on time.
What did I not ask you about that you wanted to just throw in? Anything else? I usually ask that at the end of all interviews. We may have covered most of the ground, but I wanted to give you an opportunity.
I think this – I'm really proud of my work on environmental sustainability, and I think that gets lost sometimes. The work on our river, the work with Avista passing the local clean energy law. I think it was amazing that Avista endorsed our work on that, which means we were able to be at the table with them. I'm really excited to see the Riverfront Park completely done. That's something that's a generational investment. Riverfront Park hadn't been invested in since 1974. And then I just finish with, when government spends their money on infrastructure smartly and does a good job of it, that leads to private investment. We've seen that in Perry Street. That's how that improved, and those private investments started coming in after the streetscape improved. We've seen that in my project down on Sprague during that mile. We've seen over a dozen new businesses open after we invested in infrastructure. Riverfront Park, we're investing the citizens' money smartly in Riverfront Park, and now the North Bank is starting to absolutely take off. If we smartly invest our infrastructure and target it to the right areas, just like Geiger Boulevard, we're spending money on Geiger Boulevard, that's going to lead to manufacturing, more manufacturing and good jobs out on the West Plains. We need somebody that understands that private investment is more important than public investment, but smartly investing your public dollars creates that atmosphere that allows and leads to private investment.
Ben Stuckert is one of five candidates for Spokane mayor running in the August primary. He's the current city council president. We've heard now from three of the candidates for mayor, and we'll feature interviews with the fourth and fifth candidates, Nadine Woodward and Sean Poole, soon. On Monday's Inland Journal, we'll take a one-day break from Spokane city candidates and look at state government and the 2019 legislative session instead. We'll talk with 6th District State Representatives Jenny Graham and Mike Voltz. You can find the podcast by searching for Inland Journal in Apple Podcasts, NPR One, or Google Play. Or you can find it on the Inland Journal page of the Spokane Public Radio website. Send your comments and story ideas to inlandjournal@kpbx.org. We're glad you joined us. I'm Doug Nadvornik.